Good day, everyone, and welcome to the iAccess Alpha Buyside Best Ideas Spring Conference 2024. The next presenting company is ECD Automotive Design Incorporated. If you'd like to ask a question during the webcast, you may do so at any point during the presentation by clicking on the Ask Question button on the left of your screen. Type your question into the box and hit the Send button to submit your questions. I'd now like to turn the floor over to today's host, Mr. Scott Wallace, CEO of ECD Automotive Design Incorporated. Sir, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for your time today. My name's Scott Wallace. I'm the CEO and one of the original founders of ECD Automotive Design. Over the next 20-25 minutes, I'll walk you through a quick overview of ECD Automotive Design. We are the world leader in classic car restoration, and we have two facilities. One is located in Kissimmee, Central Florida, and that's our main production plant, and our second location is based in the U.K., and that is our logistics and fulfillment center, and we currently have 100 employees. I'll just click to slide two now. That's just a standard disclaimer slide and safe harbor, so feel free to read that at your leisure. So I'll go to the next slide now. I'm gonna give you a business overview of ECD, and the following six slides should do exactly that. And what I want to try and get across in that time is an understanding of our 10-year trading history, which is important, then the organic opportunity we have in the business to continue aggressive growth. And then I want to explain the economics of our margin power, which mirrors that of Ferrari and their business success model. And then I want to cover a high-level view of the opportunity of a fragmented and unidentified market sector with a TAM of about $15 billion annually in the U.S. So, those are the things I want to try and get across today in the presentation. If I go to the next slide, this is really our history. I think it's important that we reflect on the last decade because ECD is probably not a traditional SPAC. We've been building a product for a decade, selling a product for a decade. So it's important we go through some of the history, I think. My background is in private equity and public sector within the U.K. and Europe. I did that for two decades. I moved to the U.S. 14 years ago. ECD was, like most ideas, a great idea over a beer one evening. Being public was never really our intention, but the demand for the product and the sector opportunity is what positions where we are today. We're not a typical SPAC, as I said. We've got 10 years of a robust and aggressive financial performance. Our objective, when we formed the business, 12 years ago, was to disrupt the automotive sector. The automotive sector has been pretty stagnant for years in the way it operates, and certainly from a retail perspective is, and we want to disrupt that. And how we plan to disrupt it when we put the anchors and the pillars of the business in place were, we first and foremost wanted to put the client at the center of the experience and service them more than they are serviced typically in automotive. We then wanted to let mechanics be mechanics and build a product rather than fix a product, and get them engaged and excited by doing that, and work on a retention model, rather than recruitment model for staff. We always wanted to build one-of-one vehicles. The intellectual property of what we design belongs to the client. It is not resalable or transferable, so each vehicle that is designed, the client designs it, and the intellectual property remains on them, and we always wanted the brand to be a one-of-one product. Then we identified that we had to do everything in-house. If we were going to be a luxury product with quality at its core, you couldn't subcontract. Everything is done in-house, and that was another one of our pillars. And then we also wanted to make sure that the product that we built and sold excited our owners, our clients, and our mechanics. So our selection process for a model that is produced in the facility is always built around that factor of what excites us and ignites us to keep the passion in the business. If you run through the results of the last decade, well, our lifetime revenue is $84 million over the last decade. Our revenue compound annual growth rate is 26%. Pricing, we've increased over the decade at a rate of 19% over the decade. And we have industry-leading gross profit margins of 35%. I'll expand on that later in another slide on what that means. And to date, we have over 500 of our unique one-of-one vehicles on the road in America, Canada, Caribbean Islands, and some in Europe now as well. I think what's interesting about the slide I'm presenting there is that we did that from an initial $150,000 of liquid, which I invested when we formed the company. Over the decade to get to $84 million, we never borrowed any outside capital, and we never even applied credit vendor terms. We bootstrapped the business completely ourselves. We've always had positive cash flow, and we've been profitable for over a decade. How we did that was we were exceptional capital allocators. You won't find fish tanks or fresh flowers in our building. We deployed the capital at the right areas. To get that velocity of capital and free cash flow into business, what we had to do is deploy it into mechanics and parts so that we could build vehicles. And we were very disciplined in doing that for a decade. So we have a very robust financial history, which I think is important as we continue. I'll now move to the next slide. The next slide demonstrates some of the financial highlights over time. So it takes our history and then it takes our guidance for 2024 as well. So if you take in our guidance for 2024, you'll see that that shows a 30% compound annual growth rate. And then the chart in the right shows that we have initially the margins, and that's our core discipline. And we've scaled those over the last decade every year, with them considerably ramping up in the last 3 years as we've added more customization and choice to the client journey. And I'll expand on them when we talk to the margin economics. Again, it's worth highlighting that the graph on the left and the graph on the right have been done without any external capital until we went public. So now I want to talk to you about the opportunities in the business. Now we've covered the history, you've seen some of the trading history and financial performance. The opportunity to scale ECD really comes in three different ways. One is the organic opportunity under our own roof, which I'll expand on in this slide. The second opportunity is the roll-up of smaller, similar-sized businesses that have turned orders away at a high price point because of their lack of ability to scale. There are a number of roll-up businesses in this sector that are trading at the 5 million to 10 million revenue point that just can't figure out how to scale and can't say yes on the phone to clients wanting to spend $300,000 with them. And then the third part is the classic car ecosystem that I will share in my last slide with you today. The image on the right with the building shows you an aerial view of our Kissimmee factory. We're 20 miles from Orlando International Airport, about 15 miles from Disney World, and it's 100,000 square foot of production space. It is worth noting that we have three production lines in that building. And as of right now, the North Line and the South Line are sold out in production until Q1 2025. The building allows three full production lines to produce somewhere between 180 to 200 units, running on an 8-hour shift, 5-day shift pattern on a single shift. So if we were to scale beyond the 180, it's relatively straightforward just to turn on the production via second shift patterns that we've drawn. The three lines also, interestingly, allow the same skill set to be deployed to a broader range, a more diverse product range. So the mechanics that work for us can migrate from one production line or one vehicle product to another product, whether that be British, American, or other European classics, which, interestingly, each one of those I just mentioned have a broader visibility in our current product. If you Google search a Land Rover Defender, which is predominantly our bread and butter income and has been for a decade, there are about 12,000 searches a month for that product. If you did the same for a 1967 Mustang, which is very specific by year, there are about 88,000 Google searches for that product. Now, interestingly enough, and I find this humorous, 5,000 searches a month are for a 1950 Mustang, which doesn't even exist because it wasn't produced until 1964. The point I'm making is that if we have a backlog now and have had a backlog for a decade across nearly two production lines, we've done that appealing to the niche wealth in the US with a niche British product that is a niche SUV. So if we expand that range to an American model or other European classics, there's a far broader reach than there is for our current core product, which gives us the confidence to fill the three production lines over time. Entry point to each line would be considered by the volume we can sell, the revenue price point we can sell the product at, and the margin contribution. There are three rules we apply, and we use yield management to figure out how we maximize revenue in each of the production lines. But the model I've just presented to you, if you look at the North Line, the South Line, and the East Line, It shows you some economics there in terms of number of units we'd sell, the revenue that we generate, and the average selling price, including the upgrades, which I'll touch on in a different slide in a second. So it clearly shows you the path, how we can get $75 million revenue across that single facility there that we have in Kissimmee. That model allows us to do that with very little cost of acquisition, and it allows a low entry point in terms of capital expenditure. To bring a new product into the factory literally costs us the bill of materials for car number one. So if we were to introduce a new product, it's probably going to cost us somewhere between $110,000 and $150,000. That would be our complete R&D cost. We can produce and remodel any vehicle in about 90 days. We can fully understand the mechanics of how we construct and build the vehicle in the building. But at the end of that process, it's only cost us $150,000 to integrate a new product. Google and our press fan base are very good ambassadors of promoting the product for us at low cost of acquisition. And in effect, we can launch each new product for low entry points in terms of capital expenditure. In turn from that, that would probably translate into about 18 million EBITDA and probably 11 million in net income if we were at a capacity of 75 million revenue across three production lines. And the table on the right shows you our current cap table and our debt structure post going public in December 2023. So on the next slide, I'd like to touch on what I've mentioned many times, which is the value driven by exceptional unit economics. It's the margin economic power that we have in the brand. One of the biggest drivers of our economics and our margin is our upgrades. Our clients are not cash starved. They're time and creatively starved, driven mainly by the auto industry and how it behaves. We resolve that. How we resolve that is we put the client through an immersive design experience. It can take as quick as a few weeks or as long as a year, depending how slow or fast the client wants to go through the process. We hold their hand through a number of choices where after they place an order for the base contract, they then add a series of upgrades to the vehicle. The upgrades are where we get our margin economics from. The entry point of a car is about $250,000 for a base contract, and absolutely you could use that car as an everyday classic daily driver with modern power plants. But not one client in the history of ECD in a decade has ever just took the base contract. Through the design experience we take the client through, they go through an upgrades experience. On an average, they're spending about $80,000 in upgrades. That takes the price point to $330,000 per vehicle. The minimum margin in our upgrades experience when clients are choosing items to bolt onto the car is 65%. But if you take something like paint, for example, that's in hundreds of percentage points, because if a client chooses and says they wish to paint their car in Ferrari Rosso Red, that's a stock color, we can take that, we can apply it to the vehicle. But we have clients send in items of clothing, we have clients send in house colors, we have clients send in samples from their boats. We have a lady flew in once with a handbag, and she took a handbag and we color matched it. When a client does a paint to sample option, it's a $20,000 upgrade on the vehicle, very similar to Ferrari, Lamborghini, or Bentley. The difference is that our cost of material, whether we paint it in a stock color like Ferrari Rosso Red or a paint sample, the raw material cost is exactly the same. It is in our margins, in our upgrades, where we make the most margin impact. And the table one there shows the different brands, Ferrari, ECD, Porsche, Tesla, and GM, and it shows you the gross profit in dollar value by brand. We are second from the data we can source, only to Ferrari. And why that is because we mirror exactly the same two drivers, price point by quality, exclusivity, and customized upgrade spends. Where we have an edge over Ferrari is Ferrari will call one of 500 a one of one vehicle when it's truly not. Clearly, it's one of 500. The production line doesn't allow for the fluidness like we allow in ECD. Our production line has been designed through initial launch to allow the fluidness of automotive manufacturing, but the luxury and efficiencies of customization. So we move with every 4 days a vehicle is produced off the line, but in those 4 days we can customize highly every single element of the vehicle. You can take the needle point in a gauge and you can choose three different colors on it. It's only an inch long, but you can choose the pattern of your leather, the stitch depth of every pattern. There are millions of choices you can add, and we've designed a production plant that allows for that fluidness. And that's why our margins mirror closer to Ferrari and MDLs. Table 2 on the right there shows you the gross margin impact based on spending by each client. So if you take the base contracts and then they add the upgrades at different buckets. The buckets also represent the margin impact. So where we have the highest upgrade, the gross margin goes to 41%. We have over 65% of clients in the highest upgrade bucket. We have nobody in the zero bucket. We also then have continued innovations in our product. Once we give the client choices and they wish to make more choices, we have to add more choices. We have a chief technology officer and an in-house automotive engineer. We add a minimum of one new innovation to our vehicles every single month, at a minimum sales point at $5,000, plus a price point that's going to drive that spending power. So we're not sitting kind of on our laurels. This time last year, our average upgrade was $53,000 per unit. A year later, it is $80,000 per unit. Because in the last 12 months, we've had new innovations to the vehicles from client feedback and our own research. So if I now take you to the next slide. This is the reason we went public. A lot of people ask me why ECD became a public company. And this was what we saw as the real opportunity. We identified that there is a classic car ecosystem. If you look at any city, any location, any town in the U.S., most weekends there will be a cars and coffee event, a social gathering of like-minded people. And not everybody can afford the price point, but every kind of needs a car at some point in their life, and a lot of people use a car in their life not just as a route to work and a daily driver, but also as a hobbyist kind of mindset. We identified when we did the research that there were no comps in this sector. We also identified there was no dominant player in the sector. No matter how hard we looked for research, we just couldn't find those two key things. So we started to piece together what were the elements of the ecosystem. And as we did that, we realized that it was a $15 billion opportunity. And if I walk you through each sector of that, I'll explain how it becomes reality to the client. A person who owns a $300,000 plus classic vehicle, they just want an all-encompassing, trusted, white-glove vendor to deal with every element of the ownership. They want everything to be dealt with in a premium way, and they don't want to have to keep sourcing different people to do it. It is very similar to how LVMH have built the brand power of that luxury brand. One trusted luxury parasol encompassing company that puts all things luxury underneath it. The classic car sector is primed for exactly that same opportunity. So if I walk you through some of the elements, manufacturing, clearly we are in that. And there are other people building different cars. There are small mom and pops doing it. And there's a huge roll-up sector, as I discussed earlier, within that manufacturing sector of the ecosystem. The second part is lifestyle. People need to store these vehicles. They need to ship these vehicles. They need to resell those vehicles. They want events and community points where they can meet with like-minded individuals. And rather having QC and warranty and service bays in traditional dealerships as cost centers, the lifestyle is an absolute revenue center that we could turn on. And it's just the modern country club element, look and feel and lifestyle for car enthusiasts. So that's one of the second parts of the ecosystem we see after manufacturing. The third part is financial services. Hagerty went public last year, our IPO. And financial services where people insure their vehicles, resell their vehicles, and use financing to do so. There are a lot of moving parts in the financial element of owning a classic car that aren't part of the consolidated sector either. And then you have supply chain. There are a number of suppliers that are feeding all the same vendors, where if we were actually used to do a small amount of money in tooling, we could take control of that supply chain market, and we can increase margin, we can increase efficiency, and we could increase pace. So supply chain is another opportunity within the entire ecosystem that we've identified. And then you have the market channels. The market channels are URLs like classiccars.com. You also have event space like Amelia Island, Pebble Beach, concourse events, and the auction houses. Auction houses A big part of their revenue stream now is classic cars, and they always command the highest price point. A Ferrari Enzo recently sold for $4 million, and I believe the auction house will have taken somewhere close to 10% on the consignment for that. So we think that if you created a luxury automotive brand like ECD Automotive Design, and we started that at the top of the actual market, there are then all those other sectors that we can tap into and bolt on. And for as long as we can remember, it's never happened. It's an incredibly fragmented sector. We think there is an opportunity to consolidate it. And in doing that, that's where we think we can scale not just the business, but the entire industry into a sector that's never been tapped into before. So ECG's single objective of going public was to lead the charge on the consolidation of the entire classic car ecosystem. But first, we've got to educate the markets in that opportunity. And it's very difficult to do that. There are no comps, and it's never been done before. Hence why we invited you to be some of the first to see that very opportunity. And I hope my time has shown you the robust history of ECD, the organic opportunity, and the sizable market opportunity in the classic car ecosystem, and also the outstanding opportunity of our current stock price. So I'll click for the last slide. I appreciate your time, and see if there's any questions. So good question. So I've got a question there about how easy to find used Land Rover in the UK and how much inventory of used Land Rover do you have? So, and then obviously the same question has been asked for Jaguar. So that's a really good question. There were 2 million of the Land Rover Defenders produced by JLR over multiple owners over the time of its life. It stopped being produced in 2016 when they introduced a new model to the US and the world. But until that point, 2 million were made. That was the very purpose we opened the UK Logistics Centre. And we basically went back and set up our own UK Logistics Centre so that we would be the first contact for anybody wishing to sell a Defender. Now, we purposely do that incognito because otherwise people would put the price up because they think we're selling it to somebody who's going to sell it for $330,000. We have a scout team in the UK that literally go around farmers' fields, utility companies, government agencies that use the Land Rover for policing and military. And we are continually on a 90-day cycle of having about six in the UK ready to export, six on the water somewhere on a ship in the Atlantic, and six at US customs, clearing customs. And then we normally have six at the Kissimmee facility in Florida. So 24 in location, in movement throughout the world at any one point. We source them at a price of about $9,000 as the base point, and then we add about $3,000 in shipping and customs clearance. So the base car cost is about $12,000. Now, on that vehicle, there's a 25-year rule to import it. We've worked with the Borders and Customs for years and got that down to a fine art with them. At the 25-year rule, you can import the vehicle. We then take the difficult option of building it because we use proprietary processes so that the vehicle is always going to be a Defender when you title it. Other people will try and cut corners in this sector and they'll put it on a new frame, but when you go to title that vehicle, it's no longer a Land Rover Defender, and you've probably just halved the value of the vehicle. So we do it the right way, the difficult way, but it protects the future resale value of the vehicles also. So 2 million available. We have very good logistic channels to control that. And that's how we get our base cars. In terms of the E-Type, great question. They predominantly were much more available in the US. And they were available in the UK, but there was a much bigger market in the US in the 70s. Everybody in Beverly Hills, every rock star owned one. So the model for the Jaguars is we predominantly buy them in the US. They have a higher entry point of somewhere between $35,000 and $50,000 US. We obviously don't have the same shipping costs or customs clearance costs. So your higher entry point, the difference with the Jaguar to the Defender is we reverse engineer it and we restore every single part of the Jaguar. So we have the cost is not the same after that to add parts to it. The front clamshell of a Jaguarita, which is the long hood, is about $15,000 to replace that. I could never outrun that in labor. So a labor cost per hour could never outrun what it would cost me to buy a new hood for the Jaguar. It's the opposite on a Defender where it's about $750 for a new door. So labor would outrun it quickly. So we have two different buying and production models based on the base vehicle. But I think and hope that answers your question to how we source the cars. Next question, what's the revenue opportunity given your current manufacturing footprint? Hopefully I touched on that on some of the slides. With a single shift, 8-hour shift pattern with three production lines, of which we've currently got two operating. If we opened that third production line and we brought in new products with a broader search volume base and demand, like a U.S., an American product, classic product, there's a $75 million revenue footprint across the factory is in terms of organic. We delivered $22 million last year across one line. Our guidance this year is $33 million across one and a half lines we're at right now as we're learning the E-type, which we've been into it for a year now. We only moved into new plant 20 months ago, relatively new building. And we filled the backlog there, and we've now hoping to fill that third line with a new product at some point this year. So that's where the footprint comes to get to $75 million. Ancillary opportunities we've have you decided to roll out? That's a good question, and I think majority of my time right now is spent with our M&A team and our board investors talking exactly about that. The ecosystem is what we've got to turn on, and we need to lead the charge in it. The one I see as the obvious opportunity is the lifestyle elements. So lifestyle elements is there are opportunities out there for M&A, but my philosophy is I will never buy something if we can build it cheaper and more cost effectively, and also in terms of how much capital we'd have to allocate to it. So as we look at things like that, we're actually realizing that we'd be better building it. One, we can do it more cost effectively for less capital, and we can put our stamp on it and brand it ourselves. The obvious thing to do is to go to the lifestyle section with pocket locations in areas of wealth where we have high penetration of our product. So Los Angeles, New York, Greenwich, Georgia, Atlanta's high population, Chicago, where we could open pocket, what we would call, drivers clubs, where you could store your car there, you could have your car serviced, you could have upgrades done, you could have warranty and service work done. But what we would do is we would charge a membership fee for that club. There'd be a membership fee if you were storing it and you wanted to be a member of the club, and there'd be a membership fee for people that don't have a car but wanted to be part of the lifestyle element. From there, we would the primary ancillary income channel would be the resale of vehicles. If we can control our own inventory and dictate the retail price of it, and we have pocket locations where people can see it visibly, we can definitely drive consignment income from resales at 10 percentage points on a $300,000 product. So a very low-hanging fruit. We have never, in the history of ECD, had any retail presence. Our marketing predominantly has been through press association, by them sharing our story, and via Google, where we've learned to be the Wikipedia of Google content when all things Defender, Range Rover Classic, and Jaguar. So Google's a big fan, but we've never been visible from a retail point of view. We are testing that currently. We deployed $50,000 of capital to a mobile outreach design studio, where people can design their vehicle in a high-end luxury studio we've created that we're currently touring around the country to test that market without the commitment to capital and rents and leases before we do it. The feedback has been incredible. 30% of units so far this year have come from those events. So retail windows where we can create a membership income stream, resale of cars, service of car, warranty income. Our warranty program for an extended warranty is $30,000 for 3 years. So there's definitely an opportunity to drive that as well. So yeah, in general, that's the opportunity to create the modern car dealership. At this moment in time, I think car dealerships are just, you know, old and fuddy and Jurassic, and we aim to turn them from being the car dealership model of today into a kind of a country club feel. We're driving new ancillary incomes, and events would be a good opportunity. There could be good product launches there, and there could be, you know, events there from people want to hold a social event there as well. What are other vehicles you're considering? It's just popped up on the screen, so I'll answer that quickly. I can't go specific. For obvious reasons, but we would say our next product will probably not be a European product, for all the reasons identified into the search term volumes. If there are 5,000 people in America searching for a Mustang that doesn't exist, that kind of tells you the opportunity. You're going to get a multiple of about 10 on American products versus European products on a Google search term. So yeah, absolutely. When we migrate into our next product, it won't be a British product. It'll be from another country with a broad search term. So, but Land Rover and Jaguar will always be at the core of the business as well, because there's still a demand, and we've had the demand for a decade. But the aim is to just diversify a little with products that fit and tick the boxes from selling point, margin point, and that we can build them in our model where there's luxury and customization added to each one of them. So I believe I'm out of time, and I appreciate your input and your questions. And hopefully we'll be able to speak to some more of you over the next by tomorrow in some of the meetings that we've got booked. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and speak soon.
Thank you. This concludes ECD Automotive Designs Incorporated's presentation. You may now disconnect. Please consult the conference agenda for the next presenting company. And iAccess Alpha will be hosting 4 virtual investor conferences a year. Their next virtual conference will be the iAccess Alpha's Buyside Best Ideas Summer Conference 2024, held on June 25th and 26th, 2024.